Good morning. It's April 11th, and this is your daily brief in EU news. Here's everything you need to know. In a historic decision that could redefine the global approach to climate change, the European Court of Human Rights has ruled that failing to act on climate change is not just a policy oversight, but a violation of human rights. This verdict marks a significant milestone in the intertwining of environmental justice and human rights law, spotlighting the legal responsibilities of governments to protect their citizens from climate impacts. At the heart of this week's rulings is a case brought by Swiss women who achieved a precedent-setting victory. Their success underscores not only the power of civic action in the face of climate crises, but also sets a legal benchmark for future climate litigation. This case, among others reviewed by the ECHR, establishes that state-level action against climate change is not optional, but a legal duty under human rights law. The implications of these rulings are far-reaching, potentially influencing climate change policy not only within Europe, but also in the United States, by setting an international precedent. The decisions underscore the necessity for governments to integrate human rights considerations into their climate action plans, aligning policy with the urgency of scientific evidence presented by entities like the Science Hub for Climate Litigation. This body highlights the undeniable scientific consensus on climate change and the pressing challenges faced by communities worldwide. These landmark decisions by the ECHR serve as a clarion call for urgent and meaningful climate action. They affirm that safeguarding the future of our planet and protecting human rights in the face of climate change are inseparable duties of states. This sets a new legal standard that could inspire similar actions globally, emphasizing the role of legal systems in combating climate change and protecting human rights. In a landmark decision after a decade of intense negotiations, the European Parliament has finally passed the comprehensive GEAS reform, marking a pivotal moment in the EU's approach to migration and asylum. This significant overhaul aims to address the bloc's long-standing challenges in managing migration flows and asylum requests, a topic that has sparked heated debates across member states. The legislative package, which garnered 322 votes in favour, 226 against, and 31 abstentions, introduces several key measures aimed at streamlining the asylum process. Among these are the mandatory screening of migrants at EU borders, the establishment of centres for individuals unlikely to receive asylum, and the somewhat controversial collection of biometric data, including facial images and fingerprints, from children as young as six. A particularly notable aspect of the reform is the introduction of a mandatory and permanent solidarity mechanism designed to redistribute refugees during periods of excessive strain on the asylum system. This mechanism is part of the EU's effort to share the responsibility of asylum seekers more equitably among member states. Despite the broad agreement on the need for reform, the legislation has been met with criticism from various quarters. Critics argue that the measures could compromise the EU's humanitarian principles and inadvertently bolster right-wing populism. The reform's final hurdle lies with the Council of the EU, where it awaits approval. Some member states, including Poland, have expressed reservations about certain aspects of the agreement. The European Parliament aims for the new asylum system to be in place before the European elections in June, with full implementation expected by the first half of 2026. The outcome of these reforms will be a key indicator of the EU's ability to remain united in the face of migration challenges and could significantly impact the bloc's political landscape in the years to come. As the world marked the end of Ramadan with Eid al-Fitr celebrations, a shadow was cast by the deepening crisis in Gaza and the anticipation of an Israeli military offensive in Rafah. This juxtaposition of celebration and conflict provides a poignant reminder of the ongoing struggles in the region. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan voiced his support for Gaza during this critical time, labelling the situation a bleeding wound on the conscience of humanity, a sentiment that resonates with many observing the unfolding events. Meanwhile, in Indonesia, the tradition of mudik, or annual homecoming, saw nearly three-quarters of the population travelling, a sign of life's persistence amid global tensions. In Europe and Asia, from Berlin to Malaysia and Russia, Eid prayers focused on themes of unity and reconciliation, reflecting a collective yearning for peace across diverse Muslim communities. Malaysia's Prime Minister specifically called for national unity, a message that echoed beyond its borders. The international arena is buzzing with calls for a ceasefire, spearheaded by leaders like US President Joe Biden, who has openly criticized the actions of Netanyahu and urged for an end to the violence. This push for peace is further amplified by countries like Ireland and Australia, who are now considering the recognition of a Palestinian state, a move that Israel staunchly opposes. Amidst this geopolitical chess game, the people of Gaza received a significant international aid airdrop during Eid, a glimmer of hope amidst the siege. However, this aid, while crucial, falls short of addressing the extensive needs of Gaza's residents, who continue to yearn for a return to normalcy and peace. The dichotomy of Eid celebrations shadowed by conflict underscores the complex tapestry of global solidarity, geopolitical tensions, and the universal quest for reconciliation. In a move that's sparking interest across Flandre Orientale, former Verui leader Conor Rousseau is making a notable return to the political stage. This time, he's stepping up as the list leader for Verui in the upcoming elections, setting the scene for an engaging political comeback. Rousseau's re-entry was confirmed by his successor, Melissa De Pruyter, who publicly endorsed his campaign for the elections scheduled on June 9th. Rousseau is not just returning, he's bringing a focused agenda to the table. His campaign will zero in on critical issues such as improving salaries, bolstering mental health support, enhancing education, and upgrading public transportation. These areas signal his commitment to addressing the immediate needs and concerns of his constituents. Beyond the campaign promises, Rousseau is taking a hands-on approach by planning a tour across Flandre Orientale. His goal is to engage directly with the people, listen to their ideas, and gather feedback. This move indicates a desire to rebuild trust and establish a direct line of communication with the electorate. Rousseau's comeback is poised to re-energize the Vooruit party, potentially bringing new dynamics into the political arena of Flandre Orientale. However, it's also anticipated that his return might reignite scrutiny from political adversaries, with past statements likely to resurface in election debates. The coming weeks are set to be a pivotal time for Rousseau, Verui, and the political landscape of Flandre Orientale. In a move reflecting the changing attitudes towards end-of-life care, the French government has unveiled a bill aimed at legalizing medically assisted suicide for terminally ill adults, marking a significant shift in the country's approach to the issue. This legislation comes as a response to growing public demand for more humane options for those facing the end of life under dire circumstances. The proposed bill sets forth strict eligibility criteria. Individuals must be adults over the age of 18, French citizens or residents, and suffering from a grave and incurable illness that results in intolerable pain. It explicitly excludes those with severe psychiatric conditions or neurodegenerative disorders from opting for assisted suicide. This initiative underscores a careful and considered approach to a complex and sensitive matter. As the bill heads to Parliament for debate, with a potential solemn vote looming after the European elections, the Health Minister has concurrently announced a significant investment of €1.1 billion in palliative and end-of-life care. This dual approach highlights the government's commitment to improving end-of-life care on multiple fronts. France's current legislation allows for the sedation of terminally ill patients until death, but falls short of permitting assisted suicide or euthanasia. This contrasts with policies in several other countries, including the Netherlands, Spain, Canada, Australia, and Belgium, where such practices are legal. The introduction of this bill reflects a significant shift in public opinion in France, where there has been growing support for legal end-of-life options over the past two decades. The commission tasked with examining the bill at the National Assembly is led by MoDem deputy Olivier Falorni, as Rapporteur General and former Minister Agnès Firmin-Lebodo as President. Their leadership will be pivotal in navigating the complex discussions and debates that lie ahead as France considers joining a growing list of countries that offer medically assisted suicide as a legal option for those facing terminal illness. This has been your daily brief in EU news. To read more about these stories, follow the links in the episode bio. You can also subscribe to these updates via email at www.brief.news. For more daily podcasts about the topics you love, visit brief.news/podcasts. Tune in tomorrow. We'll be back with everything you need to know.